true. Homes with radon problems can be fixed.
So what do you do about it?
I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
If I don't take care of it, nobody else will.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Well, good morning and welcome to Saturday in the studio. I'm Tom King, and we are here once again with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau, to take your financial questions. 715-845-2155, the number to call. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. As I'm finally getting myself put together.
Yes.
I'm here.
He is here, unpacked, and ready to go.
And I have the wrong glasses, the right laptop,
all right,
and a left hand.
Well, you are here, and you are available for questions, and this is why we are here every Saturday between 8 and 9 to answer people's financial questions, 715-845-2155. We talk a lot on this program about how to prepare to have enough money to retire. But there's an interesting article today talking about the psychological portfolio, the fact that you might have enough money to retire, but are you ready for retirement, and how do you handle retirement? Now, I don't know if you get into the psychological analysis with your clients at all, or talk about what their future holds in retirement.
You know, I like to tell people it says consulting on the door.
But
a lot of times it turns into counseling.
Yes. Okay. Well, I guess talk about some of the things you hear from your clients about, when they're planning to retire, if they're ready to retire, things they should need to know going into retirement that maybe some of your other clients have told you about that maybe people aren't expecting to experience when they get to retirement.
Sure. Well, you know, there's two classifications that pop into here. So the article that pops up is Robert Powell. We're just kind of having fun as a result of this article. But usually have the people, Tom, that are financially ready to go. So they have enough money. They've saved enough. They're ready to go to retirement. Their brain's just not ready yet. You know, so you have somebody who says, well, okay, at 62 years old, yeah, I've got enough money to stop and to retire and just to do something like that. But God, I just don't feel like it. I still want to keep working. So they keep working and never spending their retirement income. And then, unfortunately, we've had a number of cases like that where the person just simply passes away, so they never use their retirement income from that standpoint. So hopefully it goes off to a spouse and a couple of girlfriends, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
You know, so on that one, boy, there's nothing you can do. You get them all ready to go for retirement. Say the day you want to pull the trigger and then retire, you have the ability to. We have one of our clients here in the Wausau area continue to keep working until he's about 74 years old. And finally, at that particular point in time, his employer just simply said, all right, you're retired. We love you. Come back and visit whenever you want to. Have coffee, donuts. But you're retired now. So you're done. And so he had been working there for so long. He said, well, what am I going to do? And he still continues to keep going back again. He just doesn't sell. He just goes in a couple times a week, visits with the guys, has coffee and donuts. He wasn't ready to go from a mental standpoint. Then you have the other side of things where the brain says, I can't do this anymore. I'm mentally retired. I want to stop. I can't do this anymore. I hate my job. I can't stand what I do. I don't like the stress. But the money isn't there. And so those are the ones you have all kinds of work you have to do. But we have to be ready for that. If you think about it, Tom, you know, even in your instance, you're working right now and you're working and working and your lovely bride is working. The paychecks keep coming every 2 weeks. And all of a sudden you come to the fact that, hey, those paychecks aren't going to come every 2 weeks anymore.
Yeah.
Now we have to live on what we've saved. And it's frightening. It's like walking up the steps and then jumping into the abyss. So we have a lot of people that are frightened with that.
Frightening? That's like a version of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, it's scary. Don't get me wrong. Now, I'm fortunate. I go through retirement about 100 times a year.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of experience with it. And I tell you, people who retire, you go through the numbers. You have all the numbers ready to go. You walk them through and you let them know it's going to be okay if they retire. And then about a year later, they go, my God, how do they ever have time to work? And we hear that all the time because now they're doing so many things. By the way, men, if you're handy with doing things like, you know, decks and carpentry and all this sort of stuff, you will never have a peaceful retirement because all of your relatives are going to realize that you're now retired, and you now have the ability and time, more time than anybody else in the world because all you do is sit on the couch all day. So now you'll be doing all of your family's decks and drywall, and painting, and carpentry, and remodeling
projects. Some people
might
like doing that. Others might say, I don't really want to do this. I want to go golfing.
I think about 90% of the time, people really enjoy helping out occasionally.
When it's their choice, yeah.
But the psychological part of retiring, it is out there. It is stressful because you're accustomed to working, and all of a sudden you're going to stop. And so it takes a lot of reassuring to a certain degree. And I'm just throwing this out there off the top of my head, Tom, for everybody listening. is that it almost might be better for people when the employer comes by and says, okay, your job's been eliminated, here's the money, you're retiring, because now you're forced to do it and it happens so fast you don't have time to think about it. There may be a benefit to that, to that degree.
715-845-2155, the number to call if you have a question from Earl here this morning. One of the other Robert Powell columns talks about income shocks and how to protect your retirement from that. I would imagine if, say, somebody is 10 years out from retirement or whatever and they suffer a serious injury or an illness or maybe even lose their job and all of a sudden find themselves with no earnings for a while, for an extended period of time, how do you cushion the blow when it comes to your retirement account in a situation like that? What can you do? Anything?
You know, the retirement account is one thing. It's the savings lost while you're broke. That's the part that really gets you. Yeah, there's a number of things we try to do in our industry to help try to cushion unforeseen events. I like to joke with clients and let them know that my job is to think about all the bad things that are going to happen to them between now and the time they die. Mm-hmm. Well, not that death is a bad thing or a good thing. We'll let that determine later on. But I have to think about, for my clients, I have to do my best to think about, okay, what happens if one of you or both of you pass away prior to something bad happening. Okay, what's going to happen then with the monies, the assets, that kind of stuff? How's it going to distribute to the kids? So I have to try to think about that and let clients know. I have to think about what happens, Tom, if you and your lovely bride have three children and are all 8, 9, 10 years old and your lovely bride passes away. Well, what are you going to do? You know, so I have to think about that stuff for clients. What happens if you pass away and now your lovely bride with 8, 9, and 10-year-olds, how is that going to happen for her to continue on with the retirement plan that you had set? And so largely in this instance is where you use insurances to make sure you have yourself insured along the way. So, for example, if it's a small business owner that's doing this type of work, what will a disability do for them and in the job? Some people, for example, on mine, unless my voice disappears, I'll still be sitting here. You and I, 10, 15 years from now, Tom, we'll still be sitting here at these desks Saturday morning.
If they
morning.
Let us, yeah.
If they haven't kicked us out.
Yeah.
They'll probably have to modify the doors so we can get in with our scooters and so forth at that point. So we have to look at that and say, what can we do? Do we have to make sure that we have disability insurance in place and disability insurance that will replace the income, which, you know, many employers, they have disability insurance in place. Yeah, but they have us will replace 60% of the income. Well, if you can live on 60% of the income, let's do that and save 40%. Well, nobody ever does that. But we have to look and say, maybe we need some private disability insurance in case something happens. But we always have to protect the bad things that occur, especially from a disability standpoint. We're five times more likely to become disabled before we die than just simply dying flat out, say, from an accident or something of that nature. So you have to make sure that we add that contingency plan and those thoughts in place just in case something happens. And so that with it, boy, how do you protect yourself? Insurance, estate work, trust work, for example, making sure that we have that stuff in place on a timely manner.
Now, when you talk about insurance, there are different kinds, obviously. Some people buy insurance as investments. Other people buy insurance to use as insurance. What's your take on the two different kinds or the many different kinds of insurance and how it should be properly used?
Sure. Well, life insurance as an investment is a very rare form. Classically, people had used life insurance or sold life insurance, let me say it that way, saying this is going to be a great retirement and investment vehicle. And you can't look at life insurance that way unless it's done very specifically. And I'm using life insurance as this example first. Insurance is insurance, and we're using it to insure something. So I'm not a real big fan of using life insurance as an investment, with the exception of a very, very small amount. And, folks, when I'm talking about this, it's the ways you're obliterating the life insurance rules. I'm not going to get into it, but it's maybe one half of 1% of all life insurance that's sold is used in this manner. But the rest of it, we're using to insure something. You know, for example, Tom, and whether you know it or not, your lovely bride has talked to me. You're insured for about $3 million. So I start smelling your food for an almond scent. Which, by the way, is a smell of arsenic, I'm told.
Yes, yes.
Just letting you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so in this type of an instance, we make sure that we have, you know, one or both spouses insured in case something happens to the other, just to make sure things are covered. So a true story we had inside of our office is we had a husband and wife, and he was about 12 years older than she was. And he's hitting 62 years old, thinking that it's about time for me to retire. And the one thing they were very blessed to have is over the course of the years, they had bought a farm of their own, and their farm was next door to Mom and Dad's farm. Mom and Dad had passed away, and, of course, they received Mom and Dad's farm. They had also purchased another relative's farm across the way. Well, they had amassed some 270 acres of just pristine prime, not only farmland that was in there, but unbelievable woodland as well. And so they had just a great-looking assets on the bottom line, but those assets were all sitting inside of land. And if there's any folks that are in a farming world that are out there have a lot of land, as you know, you could be land rich but cash poor. And that was the instance in their place, too. They're ready to go for retirement. They didn't want to get rid of the land, but the amount of cash flow they were going to have was going to be relatively light because it was essentially going to be Social Security and a few other things. So part of the conversation, and again, when we talk about in our business, when we talk with clients, as to how to create cash flow, sometimes it may come from places that are a little bit odd. They had happened to be just inside of a neighborhood or a place that would really have benefited from having storage unit rentals. And so part of our conversation was that. They put in some rental units for storage units. Of course, we've all seen those on the side of the road in different places. And so that became a real nice little cash source for them as they got ready to go for retirement. But the one thing they didn't have was cash. So our recommendation for them, Tom and everybody who was listening, was that they pick up some life insurance. So they did. They went through. They bought the life insurance as we recommended. I don't remember what it was, $500,000, I think, it's something of that nature. Just in case something happened early, because she was so much younger than him, he was not able to then collect his Social Security should he pass away. We had, of course, here, as we all know, our good friend Alan comes to the office, was working on some estate work for him. They're going to finish up some documents with Alan the next morning. He had everything sitting on the side of the counter, went to work that morning, died. And so, fortunately, all the foresight that we put into this made it so that she was able to retire in the lifestyle that she had wanted. They had still had all the farms, though she kept one of them. She had eventually sold two off because these were his family's farms, not hers. She still continued on with a rental income from the storage units, and that continues to work real well for her. And she had the cash. She was able to invest in other areas and still have a nice lifestyle and income along the way. So you got to have that sort of forethought in mind because things do happen. We all know this. So you got to put those sort of thoughts in mind, and that's where the benefit of working with a financial advisor always comes into benefit, because you're going to look at things and think of things that you may not have had. Just because we've lived through these experiences before with prior clients and people we've worked with.
715-845-2155, the number to call. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with more. You're listening to Making Financial Sense with Merle Kelch. Back in a moment here on WSAU.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896. That's 1-800-642-8896. 1-800-642-8896.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that, overall, you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't seen your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed. And they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs. And it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
In a world where your tires are your only connection to the road, one man, four tires, free air. an epic battle against underinflation, tire damage, and even tire failure. In the ultimate fight for properly inflated tires, the warrior gives his heart, his soul, to keep those he loves safe on the road. Tires will inflate. Money will be saved. A message from the Rubber Manufacturers Association.
My fellow Americans, this station is great for many reasons.
I think it may have something to do
with all kinds of, like, different voices and stuff that can all
come together to talk. Know what I'm saying?
To share.
Or to argue.
To talk about lots of different things, huh?
And it's fantastic.
Now you gotta ask yourself, do you know what station this is, punk?
AM 550, FM 99.9.
And all voices come together.
WSAU.
And we're back in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch. Phone lines are open. 715-845-2155 is the number to call. Are you familiar with Peter Schiff?
Go ahead. I am familiar with the name, yes. Uh-huh.
Peter Schiff is the CEO of something called the Euro-Pacific Capital. And he has been known for years to be a big believer in gold. In fact, he has said that he still believes, even after all of the fallback for gold and prices of gold now are struggling around $1,300 an ounce, he believes that gold still has the potential to hit $5,000 an ounce, and he thinks part of that, or most of that, is because of the actions of the Fed. He doesn't believe that the Fed is going to cut back on printing money enough in order to affect gold prices in a negative way, that the negative news out there from gold investors is just wrong, and that gold is going to start shooting up here in the near future. What's your take on that?
Well, I think ultimately gold will hit $5,000 an ounce. I just don't know if it happens within our lifetime or his. I'm not really sure about that. You know, we have to look at gold. Unless there's going to be some sort of enormous demand for gold that's going to shoot the price up at this particular point in time, the next price that time that gold, in my opinion, is going to shift up is when we're going to start having a lot of economic uncertainty. So does that happen in 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 3 years, 5 years, 8 years? I don't know the answer to that. But that's typically when gold goes up. We saw, of course, gold go up significantly, you know, near some $1,800 an ounce just within the last year, and just dropped all the way back down to $1,300. Why? Because the economy is continuing to keep moving forward and having that expansion. Now, that being said, with all this money that we are printing, per se, or the debt that we're continuing to expand to have some expansion and so forth, does that have to come to an end? Absolutely. If that does not come to an end and we turn over that point where we can't monetize the debt that we have right now at such a low interest rate over a long period of time, if that becomes a problem, will we have to go to some sort of a gold standard? Yeah, probably. Could we see gold go up then? Sure, but we still have a whole bunch of ifs before that's the case. I was actually thinking to myself at one particular point in time, matter of fact, just this past week, do we have enough gold sitting inside of Fort Knox to pay off the national debt? And I wonder that question. I don't know the answer to it. I wonder if somebody does. You know, is there enough gold there to pay off the national debt? Does anybody really know?
But the national debt, we hear that term a lot. The national debt isn't going to be all called in at the same time.
Well, that's
we will never face that scenario.
That's my whole point, is that, you know, will there be a point that the national debt will be so high that we have to pay the interest rate? We can't monetize it over 3% over 30-year notes anymore. You know, monetizing something 3% over a 30-year note, I mean, heck, we're buying stuff way over what we take in all the time. Anybody who buys a house knows this. You know, we're buying a house that's just way more than what we have in our bank for the bulk of us, and we're paying for it with small payments because of our payroll check and a financing. Well, we're essentially doing the same thing to the national debt. So at this particular point in time, can we afford it? The answer is yes. Will we be able to if we continue to keep spending like this 10 years from now? I don't know the answer to that either, but I think every year that we don't have this thing fixed, it becomes more and more of a problem. And as soon as it becomes a problem, I think we then see gold shoot up. But there's a lot of ifs in the middle of there. So gold will hit $5,000 an ounce because appreciation, inflation, as time goes along, it will do that. I just don't know if it happens in the short term.
What about commodities then in your mind, in your portfolio, and portfolios that you would recommend? Are there commodities that are decent at this point in time that you need to make part of your portfolio, and what would those be?
I don't have a problem with gold at this particular point in time. I was just having the conversation this past Tuesday with somebody. I'm sorry, Wednesday. You know, I don't have a problem with gold, and for this individual, we're going to buy some gold, and I had talked about it before, we're going to buy some gold exchange traded funds. Now, this person, you know, believes that everything's going to fall apart. We just have to buy gold, and it's the only thing we can own, which is fine. They wanted to go out and buy the gold bullion. And I had talked to them about the premium versus the discount when you buy bullion. That should be up so much. So we're going to buy some exchange-traded funds for them. I don't have a problem with that because we take a look at gold over the course of the last number of years. It's at a pretty good price. Will gold go up if we look at it in 3 or 5 years? Yeah, probably. Will it hit 5,000? I don't think so, but I think we're going to still have a nice gain on gold because it's come back so much. Same thing with silver. I think we have the same scenario with silver. We can go right down a lot of the type of precious metals types of things and commodities. I think there's a good price in it. Why? Because prices are low and we're having an expanding economy right now. Still expanding by all economic numbers. Even our friends in Michigan now, as the ice is starting to thaw and the snow's coming down, they looked around and said, hey, we think that, the economy is going to be okay there. Well, that might have had a little Chicago in the middle of it, but I tried. But from that, we see the consumer sentiment going up. We saw ISM numbers go up last week. So their economy is expanding. And so with that...
Republicans can't have this happen heading into the midterm elections and things, right?
What, expansion? Well, yeah. It'll be held off until after that. They're smart.
715-845-2155 is the number to call. We're going to take a break for some news, come back with more. Phone lines are open if you have a question for Merle back in a moment here on WSAU.
It's Thursday night, and you're grabbing drinks with some friends. Started off with a pitcher for the table, which quickly becomes two. There's pool. And there's the photo booth.
All right, everybody, squeeze in. Say cheese!
Followed naturally by an order of wings. And another.
Can we get some extra ranch sauce?
Then there's the ceremonial nightcap.
So what are we doing this weekend?
And lastly, it's back to the car. Which, if you're buzzed, could be the most expensive night of your life. Getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
News now from AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
I'm Tom King, WSAU News. International Security Assistance Force officials are saying 5 NATO-led service members have been killed in a helicopter crash in southern Afghanistan. Officials for coalition forces say they have not determined what caused Saturday's deadly crash. President Obama is visiting Malaysia. He landed in Kuala Lumpur earlier today as the first sitting U.S. president to visit the Southeast Asian nation in nearly 50 years. Earlier in the day, the president took time to speak to members of the U.S. Armed Forces in Seoul, South Korea. A former Wausau businessman has been found guilty of several felonies, including sexual assault of a teenager, racketeering, theft, and... Jay Fisher pled guilty to the 2 sexual assault charges and no contest to 7 other charges before Marathon County Judge Greg Huber on Friday. It's Drug Take-Back Day in Wisconsin today. Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen says removing prescription drugs like OxyContin and oxycodone goes a long way toward preventing future heroin addictions.
We can take more of these prescription drugs out of people's medicine cabinets and have less access to our young people. We will have fewer people who are addicted to heroin down the road. So it's very, very important.
We've got a link to collection sites on our website at WSAU.com. The Brewers beat the Cubs 5-2 last night. Matt Garza picked up the win. Lyle Overbay had a home run. The two teams will play again tonight. You can hear the game right here. Pregame show at 5:35. The weather forecast for today, we're looking for increasing clouds and a high getting up to 53. An overnight low tonight of 32. Cloudy and breezy on Sunday with a chance of showers in the afternoon, high 49. Monday, cloudy and breezy with some rain and a high only up to 48. And for Tuesday, cloudy, rain once again, and a high of 47. That's news and weather. I'm Tom King, Central Wisconsin's Fox News station, WSAU.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got more food in our country than we know what to do with. Food at the grocery store and food in the vending machines, fast food, health food, and seafood. We've got so much food that anything people don't buy, we just throw out. Yet 17 million kids in America struggle with hunger. That ain't right. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Yeah, I made that up. It's kind of catchy. Hello, people. This isn't rocket science. We could solve hunger today. To start, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. We can't do it without your help.
To help solve hunger in central Wisconsin, contact Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin or visit feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
That symbol in your weather app isn't going to tell you when.
Oh, not now.
Your buddy can't tell you how long.
Yeah, I think it's going to rain this weekend.
And poking your head out the window?
Ow!
What, you're kidding, right? Your reliable forecast is at the top and bottom of the hour.
Just so I can plan accordingly.
Know when to make plans and what's coming so you and your family can take action.
Being ready for the big storms.
Severe weather on WSAU and WSAU.com.
And we're back here in the studio. I'm Tom King along with Merle Kelch, Kelch & Associates in Wausau.
Folks, the opinions voiced on this show are for general information only, not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your attorney, accountant, financial advisor, or tax advisor prior to investing. This show contains forward-looking statements which may not come true. Securities Investment Advisory Services offered through HBEC Incorporated. Member FINRA SIPC. HBEC Incorporated and Kelch & Associates are unaffiliated companies, and folks, this program is intended for Wisconsin residents only.
All right, you've got another article you wanted to touch on over there.
Something we wanted to touch upon. Again, folks, we are here for your calls. Give us a call, 715-845-2155. I almost gave you my office number, which we're not there. But give us a call. Now, in here, an interesting thing and something we've, of course, have seen within our business going over the years. And the title of the article is Retirement, Getting By on $1 Million, which is a reprint coming from USA Today by retirement columnist Rodney Brooks. Under here, we take a look at $1 million, and you know, and here they talk about that less than 10% of all savers reached $1 million in savings threshold, according to the Employee Benefits Research Institute. And Tom, you do a lot of work with that Employee Benefits Research Institute, I know.
I can't say that I do, but tell us what they say.
Well, they just simply say that less than 10% of savers, or more, only about 10% of savers save $1 million. That's all they say in this article. I'm just testing you to see if you're still with me here. Okay, we're here. So what's interesting is we take a look at how much can we live on or how much do we need to retire on. You know, back in the early 2000s when everything is going crazy in the marketplace and in the mid-90s, we were setting up portfolios in our industry for people to take withdrawals, and they're saying 7% here. In our businesses, we'd use 6%. And today we're doing 4% because of the drop of interest rates. We're looking at it and saying, well, 4% is what we're going to withdraw from our portfolio today. 4.5% in some places, depending upon where you go. But that's what you're looking at and drawing out for an income. So how much do you need to live on then for retirement? Well, let's look at the other direction and say if you take put Social Security into the mix, you say, this is how much I'm going to get on Social Security, and so far, Social Security is going to be all right. We'll see what happens by the time we get to 2030, which is what they talk about in this article as well. But if we take a look at what Social Security is, you add to that any sort of a pension, and if you take 4% then from your $1 million of $40,000 on top of that, the question is, can you live on that, which would be somewhere around $60,000 per year? And many people, of course, here in central Wisconsin, we probably can be okay on that. Can we do that in Los Angeles and New York? I bet that gets kind of tough because of the cost of living, the cost of health care, et cetera, as you go forward. But, you know, we have to make sure we have some realistic numbers and thoughts in our dollars. If we have $1 million, we're not going to live on $70,000 a year from our million. Or what we see from last year, and I had this conversation a dozen times already over the course of the last 2 months, and that is if we had $1 million and last year it grew by 20%, that's great. We're only going to take 10% of that $1 million or $100,000. We're going to only use that to retire on. Well, we can't do that when we have years like last year. We still have to stay at the 4% or 5% range so that the growth and the rest of it continue to fund ourselves and the growth of the portfolio for years to come. So a nice little article that they have in here. I do recommend it a great deal.
All right, let's go to the phone here this morning. Good morning. Who are we talking to?
Good morning. My name is Tony.
Hi, Tony. You're on with Merle. Go ahead.
Morning, Tony.
Hi, Merle. I'm in a situation right now where I'm looking to do some investments. I'm approximately 50. Would like to only have to work 10 years, but may have to do more. Here's what I'm looking at, I guess, the question I have. I have $100,000 in cash and about $250,000 in retirement accounts.
Inside of what?
Into
Inside Retirement Accounts.
Okay.
IRAN Roth. I'm looking to put to buy an investment property under 80,000. They're units in the Milwaukee area, and then purchase a place for myself to live here. I will live very conservative. I live rural Wisconsin, so I could get 60,000 or less.
Your phone's breaking up a little bit.
Okay.
Is this better?
Yeah, it is a little bit. Now, Tony, why do you want to buy a property in Milwaukee?
Well, for the simple fact, I have a nephew that attends college there. So he would be able to live in one of the units.
Okay. So when he's done, who's going to manage it?
Well, we kind of have an agreement that he will probably stay in the area for at least 10 years.
Okay, what if he doesn't? I'm being the devil's advocate here for a reason.
Correct.
I used to live in Milwaukee for a long time, and I know what happens to rental units. I had many clients in the Milwaukee area that had rental units. And there's places inside of Milwaukee that if you have a rental unit that's in that $80,000 range or less, when the tenants leave, they take everything inside of the apartment with them. And when I mean everything, I mean sinks, toilets, cabinets,
really?
The whole bit. Oh, I've heard it happen more times than you could possibly imagine. Mm. And so that's the reason I'm asking that question about a retirement place. So in here, it sounds like you're trying to help out your son, which is fantastic. But, I always have this recommendation here, Tony. I don't have a problem with rental units or rental properties, but you have to have the ability to be able to manage the properties. And one of the things Donald Trump says, he says, I don't like doing deals that are not in my backyard. He said, I like doing stuff in New York because that's where I live. I know how to do stuff. I don't like to do it in other cities because I don't know a lot of people there. And so with that being the case, if you're going to have rental units, your son, he's going to go to college. And
nephew.
When I was young, I'm sorry?
Nephew.
I'm sorry, nephew.
That's fine, family.
Okay. When I was young, I wanted to stay in Milwaukee, and of course I stayed there for a long time. I eventually moved back home here to Wausau, but we all have those intentions when we're young, but reality tends to set in. And I don't know if you know about this, but that young man might meet a lady who doesn't want to live there, and guess what? He's going to follow her. And
we discussed that.
Well, and you still know he's not going to listen to you if that happens. So here would be my thing. I don't have a problem with the real estate side of things and investing inside of that. But I would look at some things that are close to home, maybe doing some duplexes and something of this nature that's close to home where you can see it. You can watch it. You can see who's in there. Maybe you live in a half of the duplex and somebody else lives in the other. But I would look at it more of that. I think living in a place.
My financial question is, if I guess what my ultimate question is, are you allowed to borrow from your IRA or your Roth? I only want to use about $60,000. I need my cash in my money market to make me money. We do pretty good in buying and selling stocks, but I'm nervous of where that's going to go. Can you borrow if you make payments back or you pay it within a certain amount of time, or are you automatically penalized, no payments back?
With a 401k or with an IRA?
No, I have about $130,000 in an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Then some years ago, I switched over when they came out with the Roth, and I have about $75,000.
Yeah, you can't borrow from it. It doesn't quite work that way. You can't borrow from your existing Roth IRA. Now, I'm going to say this, and then you're going to start asking me questions about it, and it hasn't been done in a long time. I know it happens. I know it exists, but I don't know the facility. Long ago, there was a bank out of Nebraska that would be the custodian for almost any property that you'd had. So, for example, you could have your IRA and deposit your IRA in cash at their bank, and then you could buy a piece of real estate property, and they would take your cash and buy the piece of real estate property and be the custodian for that property on your behalf. So that way you did not spend or take constructive receipt of your IRA dollars and spend it for the house, but the bank would then buy the house on your behalf and then hold the property and have a quarterly value and all this sort of stuff. You'd have to pay them the management fees for doing so. So it is legal to do that, but I don't know the facility. I don't know any banks that do that at the moment, but there was one in Nebraska that did. So in that, you'd have the ability to have that entity or that custodian on your behalf with your money buy the real estate wherever it is you might want to be.
All right, so I guess the other question then I have in my mind, if I was going to put $30,000 on each, I'm looking basically to be carrying $75,000 between the two properties.
Okay.
$50,000 on one, $30,000 on the other.
Okay.
Do I do it that way, or should I, even if it were a duplex local, do I put more down on the income property or residential?
Well,
rates are about the same, At a 15-year, we're at 3.375.
You'll have the interest rate on either one of them. It doesn't matter. I always just want to make sure that the rents that I'm going to be able to collect, am I going to be able to cover the cost of the debt service plus the sinking fund? Of course, taxes, too.
Correct.
I think that, of course, and you certainly have thought about this, I'm sure, but you know, if you're going to buy a duplex and you're going to buy it locally or down there, wherever you're going to buy it, you have to make sure that the rents are going to cover not only the debt service, but they're going to cover the taxes. But you also want to build in at least, say, $75 or $100 a month for a sinking fund because you know something's going to break.
Correct.
Now, on top of that, are you going to make any money? Now, that's what I would look at.
Well, and that's what I have. I said, worst-case scenario, I have no renters. At about $80,000, that's the max, actually. I'm looking more like one at $75,000. I put down $30,000 of that mortgage in $50,000. They have four units. Most of these, a lot of these are college students, which the off-rat houses aren't the greatest either. But mom and dad often pay the rent.
Yeah, a lot of maintenance, though.
Right. They're pulling in about $550 to $600 a month. I looked at worst-case scenario. My income can cover that mortgage and my taxes if I had no renters.
Okay. Is it going to put any money in your pocket, though, profit?
Well, I look at even if I had only two units out of the four, that'd be $1,000 a month.
Right.
Easily make the payment.
Right.
Plus your sink fund. Taxes run about $3,200 a year.
And you don't see any scenario where they would all be vacant at the same time?
Well, that's what I thought of. The worst case scenario,
yeah.
No one's there.
Yeah.
That's why I only want to take $60,000 out of my $100,000 cash because I always get nervous.
And the reason you're doing this, if you made the comment earlier, is you're not comfortable with the direction the stock market is heading at this point.
I'm nervous attack. So yeah. I've been advised, and this year I got, because I'm renting my mother's home, I moved back from another state, and I make about $3,200 a month income.
Mm-hmm.
And with nothing, and capital gains going from 15% to 28%, I owed $10,500 in taxes. I almost keeled over. Yes, I had a good year in the stock market. We made $27,000. But some of them stocks were sold in less than a year. And my tax accountant said, if you're looking at real estate, do it.
Yeah.
I need something.
So you're looking at it for tax relief as well.
Well, and right, if I'm 50 and I only want to work 10 years, which possibly we could do this, then that property is paid for and there's some income.
Sure. Tony, the
actually,
thing you have...
most of us are, you know, better off, my situation anyway, because I worked one job 24 years, I'm better off to retire. But I can't right now. Between my pension from both jobs, my Social Security, and what I could draw out of my IRAs, if I keep that a minimum, I'd be making more money a month than I am working.
Sure.
And tell me why you're still working in that scenario, then. I'm confused.
I have to, and for insurance. I'm only 50.
For health insurance, okay, all
right. Right, and I'm only 50, so I have to, and like I said, I have about $250,000, and my goal was $500,000 or better.
Sure.
But I guess where I'm nervous is I don't know where this market's going. It's so insecure to me what's happening all over. Do I use that money and put it in an investment property?
All right.
Will real estate hold better than a stock?
I appreciate
sure.
the call. We'll just kick that around here quickly. And I guess in general terms, Merle, do you suggest to people that they take money out of their equities and put them in real estate at this point in time? And what part?
I typically don't. Typically, inside of a brokerage account of that nature, you can buy real estate on the inside where you don't have to actively manage it. But, you know, my concerns are, you know, if this is a, you know, one of the, you know, both, Tom, I think you were in probably the dorms or student housing in college too. So was I. And they can make a lot of money. As long as, Tony, you have the ability to do the maintenance on it and you have somebody there that's going to take care of the maintenance, and you know that you're going to be able to make a profit at the end of it, and you're watching your financing, I don't have a problem with you. You're going to have the depreciation. It should work out well. But remember, you still have to take care of all the maintenance on it, and doing maintenance from afar always takes some work.
I had some friends who lived in some student housing in Madison where I don't think there was ever any maintenance done. They were basically tenement buildings.
Yes.
That were making a lot. People were making a lot of money on them and not spending a lot of money on
Indeed
them.
Indeed so. Well, good luck on that, Tony.
All right. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back with more. Still have time to take a few calls. If you want to talk to Merle, give us a call. We'll be right back on WSAU.
Wildfires burn millions of acres across the country each year. And each year, wildland firefighters battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone. For some communities, it's not a question of if wildfires strike, but when. And a single ember can travel more than 1 mile. As it twists and turns and floats through the air, that single ember can find its way to where you live and can ignite and destroy your home or your community. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. You can't control where the ember will land, but you can control what happens when it does. You can take action now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. Prepare, protect, prevail. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Getting your child home safely.
Tap your heels together 3 times.
It's just a click away.
There's no place like home.
But making sure your child is in the right seat is just one of the steps down the road to safer travels.
I don't know how it works.
Find the right seat for your little one's age and size. There's no better way to get home safely. Know for sure that your child is in the right seat.
How can I ever thank you enough?
Get all the facts at safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Brewers baseball on the Brewers Station, WSAU.
Hello again, everyone.
Bob Uecker, Joe Block, and the Brewers on AM 550, FM 99.9.
All right, here we go.
WSAU.
Hey, get up! Get out of here! Go!
The Brewers are right here. AM 550, FM 99.9, WSAU.
Tonight, the Brewers and Cubs from Miller Park. Game coverage at 5:35 on the Brewers Station, WSAU.
And we're back here in the studio. We've got a few minutes left. If you have a question for Merle, give us a call here this morning. You planning on moving to Panama anytime soon?
I might be because the costs are about half of what they are to be here in America to live. Yeah, we talked about this article before that said, you know, is $1 million enough and getting by on $1 million during retirement? One of the last things they had in there, so I have a little bit of fun with this. As they say in here, move to Panama. Well, many American retirees, and I'm reading verbatim, many American retirees responded to the dilemma of underwhelming retirement fund by decamping to various corners of Latin America, Southeast Asia, Europe, where housing and health care are relatively modern but still dirt cheap. And so for this, overseas for $25,000 a year. Now, I've been to a lot of different foreign places, and there's some places I think it would be fun to go to. I don't know if I could live there all year long. For example, Vietnam is really hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a big fan of heat since I'm the size of a bear. I think we should hibernate in the summer with air conditioning or someplace cooler.
All right. 715-845-2155. You know, speaking of other countries, obviously the crisis in Ukraine is heating up and it is making itself felt in corporate earning reports. A number of companies are watching very closely what's happening in that, and including companies like Caterpillar, UPS, and Monsanto. And the question being raised is, it says some companies are already attempting to factor the geopolitical conflict into their business plans, at least as told through their earning reports and calls. Do most companies do that, especially obviously the ones that have dealings overseas, but do most American companies work in what's happening geopolitically around the world into their business plans? Is that something
absolutely
they need to do?
Yeah, all their forward directions. Hey, look at it for Caterpillar. If Caterpillar is selling 100 units of their, whatever there is, per year in the place. Now it looks like it's no longer going to be part of the Ukraine, and Ukraine's going to be unrest, and the banks aren't going to be able to finance anything. You know, they have to look at part of their business model and say, well, now we might only sell 20. So with that, they're going to have that loss of 80 units. It's going to factor into not only their benefits from a European side of things, but come to the bottom line potentially. And it's got larger global. We may have locally Raytheon. Raytheon, of course, makes missile defense. And if it gets really bad, we might have to look at them and they have to say, well, we're going to sell more units over there for defense. It'll do better. So all corporations look at this on both sides when there's some sort of a conflict or something going on. I think one of the places that's going to be a little bit more frightening is from a global banking standpoint, because there's a lot of Italian company or banking firms that have done a lot of lending and financing inside of the Ukraine. And as a result of that, we just saw this past week that the global community reduced Russia's debt down, downgraded it. Ukraine's having the same type of an issue in their ability or wondering if they're going to be able to repay back that global lending. And so with it, that's some of the stuff I'd look at is some of the European theater things for some of our larger U.S. companies, too.
Especially farm companies as well. Ukraine known as the breadbasket of that area of the world.
Absolutely.
And if the farm fields are somehow suffering problems because of armed conflict there.
I'm certain we're looking at deer in this sort of a scenario and these companies that sell in those areas. I assure you that they're looking at what's going on inside of these places. It's hard to farm if there's a war going on, you know.
All right, well, hopefully the cooler heads will prevail and we'll keep the shooting out of it and keep the social disruptions of a war in that area of the world out of it as well.
Well, hopefully they're still continuing to work the fields and generate the food that's needed for the area along the way.
So, all right, well, we're just about out of time here for today. If folks want to get a hold of you on Monday, how can they do that?
On Monday, we'll be here in the lovely and beautiful Wausau, Wisconsin. Join us on 3rd Avenue and Bridge Street. Swing on in, grab a cup of coffee should you choose. See if you can catch us in the middle of there, and we'll say hello and hi. Give us a call, 715-849-3600 inside the Wausau area, outside of Wausau. Toll free at 866-355-5100 or find us online at KelchinAssociates.com.
All right, and if you're looking for something to do today, why don't you join me out at the Rock and Roll Revival? It's the last one they're having at the Rothschild Pavilion. It starts at 3, runs till midnight tonight. A lot of your old favorite bands from the 60s, 70s, and 80s will be performing, and it just costs $5 to get in, and all of the money raised will be going to the Honor Flight. So if you like old-time rock and roll, come on out to the Rothschild Pavilion today starting at 3 o'clock. And running till midnight for the Rock and Roll Revival. They're calling it The Last Stand. All right, we're out of time. The news is next. We've got the polka shows on the way as well. And don't forget Brewer baseball tonight as well. The Brewers and Cubs from Miller Park. Pregame show at 5:35 right here on WSAU.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more. So I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things